6000 for 10,000.
270, climb to 12,000, South 1063.
Frequent Flyer, here it is, Saturday, March 16, 2024, here Saturday. We got the Bruins game on in the background. Flyers Bruins 1-1, second period just started, so I'll keep you updated with that as we go along here. And that's going to be a talking point of the episode, is this upcoming schedule. I guess the current one they're in, they're seven-game little stretch of hell here. They got beat by the Leafs a couple days ago, got beat by the Lightning last week. And they did manage to beat the Sharks, thank God, in a surprising twist, and we'll see how this Bruins game turns out. But big stretch of playoff-caliber teams they're facing. I believe Money Puck has the Flyers at like an 82% chance or something to make the playoffs, which feels high, but they are alone in third place in the Metropolitan Division right now because the Islanders, Caps, and Devils cannot get their shit together long enough to make any kind of run at them. But on the whole here, you know, this stretch will determine a lot, and luckily, they can't get the shit together because the Flyers themselves are struggling to really kind of step up when it matters most. They had that weekend series a couple weeks ago with the back-to-back with the Rangers and Penguins where they dropped both of them. Could have made some ground, but they haven't. They could be comfortable in the Metropolitan Division standings right now, and they're not. They're still hanging there because they just can't help themselves. And we'll talk about all that and recap the trade deadline. This is the first time. It's only been a couple days since the last time you guys heard a Freaking Flyer episode, one in the middle of last week, but it's been quite a few weeks now since the three of us have actually been together, so we got some shit to recap, that's for sure. And to help me do that tonight, my co-hosts are back, Mike Aceto. Mike, how's it going?
Gentlemen, it is phenomenal to be with you, as always. You know, I was talking before the show about potentially cracking this this gangrene beer by Imprint Beer Company, and I think I'm going to do that right now because... this is essentially like taking some sort of illicit drug, and I've got it open. So I was saying, if I go off the deep end, you know why. So bottoms up, boys. Here we go.
God, getting drunk, and we didn't even start talking about Morgan Frost yet. God. Oh, well. Maybe by the end of this, I'll indulge with you as well. We'll see. We don't need another Christmas show here in the middle of March. But and back, as always, Manny Benavides as well. Manny, how's it going?
Salutations and greetings, gentlemen. Well, we're here. We're almost at the end of this Flyers regular season, and all of the rah-rah, and look at how good they're trying, and I'm amazed at this team, and it's all true, and it's all good. And now fans are, like, ditching this team because the schedule's getting tough. Really? What kind of fans are you guys? Bunch of negative Nancys, if you ask me.
Yeah, y'all are the negative ones, not me. It's, you know, as I frantically look for the standings, there they are. Lost to the Leafs, just got drubbed on Thursday, 6-2. Got destroyed by the Lightning last week, 7-0. And, you know, it's been the storyline of the season, something that we've harped on a lot. The Flyers are living vicariously through their culture, and every once in a while they can get the stars to align, and this group of ragtag idiots can get a win or two. But on the whole, when it comes to playing these teams, and especially now that these other teams are in playoff mode themselves, it's no longer looking easy anymore. And you see the difference in pure raw skill and talent of the Lightnings and Leafs and Bruins of the world versus, you know, the three-fourths lines the Flyers ice every single night. And it has been the big difference, and it's probably going to be the consistent stretch here. They got Leafs again, Hurricanes, Bruins, Panthers, Rangers, to finish out that five-game stretch. They do have a bit of a relaxing there at the end of the month. Canadians, Blackhawks, Islanders, Sabres. But on the whole, you know, this stretch could really determine if they walk away with more losses than not. It could determine if they end up making the playoffs or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this is it's going to be a critical stretch, no doubt. And what I see on this team right now is they're kind of feeding off of the good fortune they had at the beginning of the season when they had Carter Hart on this team that was having an excellent season. Everybody was playing above their head. They had very minimal injuries, and they kind of created a nice little buffer for themselves during the first half, kind of almost through January here. And, you know, right now we're seeing that slowly fade away. They're barely keeping up with the competition. In fact, they're not really keeping up at all with a lot of these bona fide playoff teams. And it's almost coming to Jesus moment and saying, look, you know, this was a nice little stretch we had here, but, you know, these are the teams that are the cream of the crop. And we're getting beaten, you know, 6-2 and 7-0, and who knows what's going to come during this stretch here. And the only way they can potentially keep up is if they play. I forget, there was a quote that Lawton had about tonight's game against Boston that was something effective. You know, it's going to be dirty and naughty and something like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, I don't, you know, I'd rather watch the paint dry, I guess, than watch the Flyers play the Bruins tonight. I mean, come on, Scotty. So it's, you know, if that's the mentality on how they're going to compete down the stretch here, I'm not sure that's really a recipe for success long term here. So, you know, we're watching the blood slowly drain out here, and I'm not terribly optimistic, especially given some of the injuries.
Yeah, for me, the injuries are the big difference. Like, for the most part all year, and I think everybody would agree that they've punched above their weight. They've been a real pleasant surprise. The work ethic is there. The players are working really hard, and the results were coming. They were also pretty healthy for the most part of the season. And the difference between, you know, last year, the year before, you know, I know that, you know, with Coots and Atkinson missing significant portions of time, a lot of people relied on it was the injuries. That's the reason why this team didn't succeed. And it's partially true. But I think what we're seeing now is that the depth on this team really isn't there. I know that the high-end skill certainly isn't there, but when they receive a significant injury or two, to a guy like Jamie Drysdale or, you know, to other players that are missing time now, it's going to be a bit of a slog, and it's going to be challenging for, as good as the systems are with Brad Shaw and John Tortorella on the defensive side, it's just not there. Like, the talent just isn't there. And we're in the middle of the playoff hunt here, and other teams are jockeying for their position as well and trying to punch their ticket. It's not going to be easy going forward. And I think we're starting to see that this is, you know, now that the injuries have piled up, as Mike alluded to, I think that this is like, we're starting to see like this team really, really in a bit of a slog. And a lot of these guys have really just hit a brick wall, and they're just, some of them are nowhere to be found. Where's Captain Coots? He's really been struggling the last couple of weeks here. And there's other guys that have been really, Atkinson still has not found his game for seemingly like 6 weeks now. He's been in a lot of trouble too. And like, this is the end of the season and playoffs are right around the corner, and teams are supposed to be ramping up in preparation for the playoffs. And this team's really hit a brick wall heading into the playoffs. I don't envy the position of, whatever team's going to be facing them might be licking their chops come the middle of April.
Yeah. I mean, if the season ends today, they're playing Carolina in the first round, and that's kind of been the setup for a little while. And I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of change to that going out, unless the Flyers drop out of the playoffs, because I believe the wild card belongs to Tampa and Detroit right now at 76 points and 74. So if the Flyers would get overtaken by the Islanders, and they would still be in a wild card spot. So Islanders 73 points, Capitals 71, Devils 68. The Flyers, this is their 68th game of the season, so the Islanders have two in hand. The Caps have three. So it's close. It's not an impossibility that these teams can still overtake the Flyers. They can rest on their laurels of their work ethic and whatnot, but, you know, the heat is on. And there are teams that, especially a team like Tampa at this point, that just, they can meander through the season, get into the wild card spot, not think twice about it, and then just turn it the fuck on, and Stamkos and Kucherov is going to run your ass over. You know, and those are the kind of teams that you got to kind of worry about here. And that's what good playoff teams do. You know, you don't exert much during the regular season. You can just win games, make it in, and then turn it on when it matters and go for it. And the Flyers here are, you know, we've talked about this since day one of John Tortorella, the 82-game playoff schedule. They've been busting their ass since October, you know, and every single game just to get as many wins as they do. And now that it's coming to the end here, we're 70 games in. Everyone's tired. Everyone's banged up. You got the few injuries on the blue line. And all of a sudden, you know, it's going to be quite the push here. And even if they make it, you know, does this team stand a chance against the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round right now if the season ended today?
No. I doubt it. And the thing is, what's also kind of crazy is some of these percentages. And I think, Dan, you'd mentioned also before the show about Flyers are still in what, the mid-70s or 80-some percent to make the playoffs, which sounds crazy given how they're playing now, but they just created this nice little cushion for themselves that it seems like everybody else is fighting uphill.
80.4% right now, according to Money Puck, their odds to make the playoffs.
Wow. Gosh, that seems... I know it's only a few weeks left in the season. That seems pretty high, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does seem high, but I mean, look at the teams chasing them. The Devils can't buy a win. They just lost today to Arizona. The Islanders stumbled. They still got a point against the Senators. They've kind of hit a little bit of a skid here after winning like 7 or 8 in a row. You know, like who else? Pittsburgh sucks. Like every other team in the Metro, I mean, the door is wide open for the Flyers. If they could get like a couple of wins here, 2 to 3 in this 7-game stretch, they should be clear unless the wheels completely fall off.
And they might. I mean, they might. I wouldn't be shocked if this team goes, you know, like 2-6 over the next 8 or something like that, or gets 4 points out of the next 12, you know, something like that. I think that's completely fair game for where this roster is at and where the schedule's at. And, you know, maybe other teams are struggling so hard, it may not really matter at the end of the day, but it sure is not the way you want to finish out the month of March as you get into the very brief stretch of April before the playoffs. And it's just, you know, it's hard to really get, you know, too excited or too stoked about what they're doing, because we kind of know it's like, look, this was a lightning in a bottle sort of thing. And they're coming back down to earth here. And, you know, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I'm not even so sure it's best for the team long term if they make the playoffs here. I think that there is an argument to be made that this team is better off missing the playoffs and not thinking that they've achieved more than they actually have, and not thinking that these players are better than they actually are. And I think a lot of people would probably agree with that. So, you know, there's definitely something to be said about that. I think the front office is going to say it was a successful season no matter what. They've already achieved enough for them to say A+, 5 stars, yes, sir. So, you know, everything else from here on out seems to be gravy to me in terms of their eyes.
Yeah, and this is one thing that I had in the notes here. And I remember very specifically when the Flyers made the playoffs in 2018. Brotherly Pod did not exist yet. Our first show was early 2019, but I was on O&B at the time, and I remember the topic came up of, even though they lost the way they did, was this season a success? You know, that was the big question. And I put this in the notes because I saw a tweet today from our friend Dan Knightley, who said, your first reaction, if the Flyers miss the playoffs this year, it is a successful year or a wasted year. And I saw that tweet and thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. And the thing is like, I don't think either one of those two terms matter to me in terms of what I think of this season anymore. Whether they barely make or barely miss the playoffs doesn't have much bearing on the conclusion of the storyline of the season. Because at the end of the day, to me, no matter what happened this year, whether they were dead last in the league or whether they made the playoffs and got killed in the first round by the Hurricanes, doesn't matter. It's always been about how they build, how they respond beyond this year. And what they've done is chose to not rebuild. They're not rebuilding. I never want to hear that word again, because they're not doing it through the draft. They're not doing a classic rebuild. We can't do a rebuild. We need to start fucking piling forever. That's their version of a rebuild, quote unquote. So it doesn't have anything to do with that. To me, they've picked their path, and now it's about getting better. It's about making improvements during the summer to actually prove that they want to win, to be a competitor. So whether or not they make or miss the playoffs, if they get crushed in the first round by the Hurricanes or the Islanders storm back and they lose a spot and they miss, doesn't matter because it's a negligible difference between the two results at this point. They're not going to win a cup this year. They're probably not making it out of the first round, you know. So at that point, it's an interesting one of, you know, is the season a failure? I don't think so. I mean, it's gravy. It's a success. It's better than anybody thought. But now it's up to the front office, especially with the extra wins, to put their pedal to the metal here, do something in the summer to continue and make sure this team takes a step forward next season. And to me, that's just the biggest question in general right now. Mm-hmm. This front office have the collective brain power to realize that they have to make an addition this summer to get better. You know, that one is TBD, obviously. But for right now, you know, if they make the playoffs, great. If they don't, oh well. You know, that's just not the point of the year. The point is, how do you get better in the summer?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very strange dynamic that they're in right now, because I can't think of a single team in sports that, for all intents and purposes, labeled themselves in year one of a rebuild and have done what the Flyers have done. It's just like the rhetoric is incongruent with what we're seeing on the ice or seeing on the field, whatever. So it's hard to make sense of what's going on here. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I think that, you know, there are some commentators like us that are kind of seeing through that right now and saying, well, you know, we're hearing one thing, we're seeing another, but we think it should be this. And it's just a very, very weird dynamic I see that's going on with this team right now.
Yeah, the success or failure was a brilliant poll question from Dan Knightley. And it's kind of loaded in a way, because it all depends on what you define as your goals heading into the season. In terms of the standings, everybody was basically like, this team's garbage, they're not going to get anywhere near the playoffs. And they exceeded those expectations and they're in the playoff hunt. And right now they've got a spot. So the knee-jerk reaction would be to automatically say that, yeah, it's a success. But I think, as Dan Esch alluded to, is instead of Dan Knightley, is now you've painted yourself into the, well, you announced a rebuild. So are you doing enough overturn of the roster? Are you collecting enough draft capital? Are you getting rid of contracts that you don't want? Are you doing enough of those things in order to secure? We know it's not draft position, because it ain't that. They seem to be going with the, you know, we want to get as many draft picks as possible, or at least two in the first two rounds for the next 2 years or whatever it is, including this year. But they're not going for the actual position itself. They're going with quantity over quality.
The Ron Hextall approach. We've got this many picks in this many rounds, even though they're all going to be in the, you know, later portion of the round and not make a difference anyway. Mm-hmm.
And that's what the front office and the rebuild people are going to say is, well, how can you say that they're not rebuilding, because they're accruing the draft assets? And there is a point. They do have a point there. They are trying to do it that way. I just don't like the particular strategy of, we're going to work our ass off, and then if we get in, okay, great. They get, you know, playoff experience by getting manhandled by the Hurricanes in the first round. But if they even just miss, well, it's still a success, but like, really, is it? Because you're going to be drafting 15th in the first round. Like, is that really what you want? You kind of were hoping to get into that, you know, 8 or 9 kind of range at like worst, right? Yeah. And you're not really getting that. So, I mean, then it's the whole, well, Michkov's coming and Michkov's the talent.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't play center. And if you're going to try to shoehorn him into being a center,
which they will,
I mean, I hate this. Like, I don't want our front office to be reading the Kama Sutra, like looking at all these positions. Like, just put the player in the position where they are best going to succeed. I don't care about putting, you know, your legs behind your head and, you know, you're getting a BJ at the same time. I don't care about all that stuff. Just get it done. Like, put the, whatever works, works. As long as everybody's happy, then everybody's happy. Jesus, I hate this idea of this. So the idea of a success or failure, the truth for me is it's a little bit of both. You could argue that there's aspects of this that have been a success, but in terms of, you know, some of the younger guys, like, listen, Forrester has been a huge success for me. That's been a huge bright spot. Other guys like Brink have been, you know, certainly after the demotion and everything else, I could say that there's been a little bit of stalling on that aspect. Guys like Adder not getting a shot, guys like Lexell getting a little bit of a raw deal when they're up here, I think that's a little bit problematic in terms of the overall rebuild. So from that sense, I'd say it's definitely a failure. But I could see a little bit of both. A little bit of column A and a little bit of column B for me.
I mean, if you're trying to build a better future, they have not done a great job of that. And not only because they're fucking themselves in the draft picks and they're not going to do what's necessary and they're not playing their kids, but I don't know. Yeah, it's very much a Ron Hextall feeling of look how many draft picks we have versus let's try and make something out of them. And if this season's anything to go on, it doesn't matter how many fucking players they draft if none of them end up playing in the NHL because Nick Seeler and Ryan Poehling are here and just need to be playing instead. So, I don't know. Development is still a gigantic question when it comes to this team and building for that future there. But, you know, it's part of the problem, and this is my favorite stat. 19 of 23 players are already under contract, including all 12 forwards. If they can't work Brink, Lexell, and Tuomala in this season, how are they going to do it next year if everyone's already here? They're just going to run back the exact same group. They're not just going to magically give Brink ice time for no reason next year. It's not going to happen. So they still got a lot of work to do to prove that they can get better. And I mean, quite frankly, it's the thing they haven't done in 15 years is make an addition, make a big move that makes the team better. You know, it just doesn't happen in Flyer land anymore. And it's the biggest hurdle to someone like me believing is I don't think for a second that we're going to walk away from this offseason and they're going to have a number one center in tow that they went out and acquired, that they gave up picks for. No, they're going to run it back with Scott Laughton and Sean Couturier. Your pair of 30-year-olds and see what they can do, you know?
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, you know, you overexceeded expectations, but are you actually any better built for the future than you were when you started?
Yeah, and I think that kind of also gets to Dan. I don't think that, you know, we've been together on a show post-draft last week, so it kind of goes, or I'm sorry, post-trade deadline, not draft, but it kind of goes to, well, what have they done? You know, there's very few moments during an NHL season or a league year where teams can make moves that can position themselves for the future. And I think that, you know, we had been talking pretty much since last offseason about what is going to happen at this trade deadline. And, you know, we saw a couple of things. We've heard the analysis from other commentators. We've read the beat writers. We've seen the lapdogs do their dance and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think it's important for us to kind of weigh in here. And, you know, I know we were talking in chat last week about it. And I don't know if you guys were to grade this, where would you come out? I think my grade for Danny Briere here is somewhere around like a C to a B minus in that range, where I think he did what needed to be done with respect to getting Walker out and getting that first round pick. That's important. But the other moves I think were pretty much irrelevant. Like they didn't really move the needle forward or backward. You have the Ryan Johansson situation now, where you have to deal with that through the rest of the season and in the off season. So, you know, I don't know. I think that it was helpful, but I don't think it really was very determinative in terms of where they're headed. You know, what say you guys?
That's a good point. I saw a lot of people that, oh, they finally picked their direction. And I'm like, they fucking did? What? Like, you got rid of Walker. Thank God, though. There's always a chance I could re-sign him in the offseason. I've heard that theory thrown around about already. But they got rid of him. They got a first-round pick. But they took on Ryan Johansson. I still don't know. Still don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
1 year left at $4 million. He's injured right now. And you cannot buy out an injured player, which means that he's due his full salary next season, even though he's injured, quote unquote.
And he will milk that. He's the kind of guy that will milk that.
Apparently. So, and, you know, they care about their culture so much, but they brought this guy in who's apparently the fucking Antichrist to come in and do something. They demoted him to the AHL where all your prospects are. Great job, Bria. That's a good way to fucking develop your players. And now he's injured, going to milk you for the last year of your contract so you can't buy him out. So it's a whole fucking headache. It wouldn't have just been easier, and I thought about this in a couple shows. Trade Walker for a second, and that's it. No headaches, no nothing. And you just get a second-round pick instead of this first-round pick with this fucking Johansson lingering over your head. Fourth-round pick for Eric Johnson. The guy's fucking terrible. there were Sabres fans on my timeline that day that were like, thank God he's off the team and they got a fourth rounder for him.
And that was a reward, Dan. That was a reward.
Yeah, that was their reward for working hard. Yeah, because they need him to.
That's Eric Johnson.
Eric Johnson to make the playoffs. Yeah, and then Wade Allison for Denis Gurianov, which is a complete nothing happening move there. I'm happy for Wade Allison that he gets an opportunity to start elsewhere here because he clearly was in Tortorella's doghouse. Deserves better than ever he got from this franchise. And the other one was a, what was it, fifth-round pick for retaining on Noah Hanifin, which is the closest that this team will ever have a top defenseman on their roster, is the retained salary of Noah Hanifin. But, yeah, that was their deadline. You know, it was C+, B-. It could have definitely been worse, but it was one of those things where at the end of the day, you didn't really, I mean, you got a first-round pick, but you took on a problem child, and the other two moves were pretty much a whole lot of nothing. So, yeah, I mean, it was fine. Could have been worse. Could have been better. The story of the fucking Philadelphia Flyers over the last few years, right? It could have been worse. Could have been better.
I'll go a little bit more positive. I'll give it a B, only because it was important that the first round pick that they got was a 2025. And a lot of what I'm thinking is that not necessarily the Avs pick, but I think that the Flyers pick next year could be really important, especially in that never ending freaking Lord of the Rings quest to get a 1C on this team. That's going to probably be the only way that they can get one, is it'll be in next year's draft where there should be more forwards, especially at center, than in this year's draft. So part of me is like thinking that Briere and the front office are kind of hedging their bets and they really wanted to get that first rounder, which is good. And it was important. And that's why I'm giving them the B. I thought from the beginning that Sean Walker would have gone for a second. I wanted the second to be in 2025 though, not this year. I'm glad that they parlayed it into a first instead, but yeah, as you said, Dan, now you got problem child Ryan Johansson. And whatever is going on with him, and nobody knows. In a way, like, there was a confusion on Flyers Twitter too, because there was a group of people that were like, well, he's a center. Let's see what he could do. Like, let's at least plug him into the lineup and, you know, spot Coots some time here. Give him a little bit of take away some of Coots.
Could he possibly be any worse than any of these other centers they got right now?
Right. And I was kind of the same way. I don't think he's going to be a game changer by any means, but at least you, as an act of goodwill, you kind of just put him out there. And it's almost like the Flyers just like within an hour of acquiring him, just said, here, you're going to the
10 minutes of acquiring him.
And I know that there was people out there going like, well, they're going to flip him and retain $2 million and get another pick for him.
Uh-huh.
And like that didn't materialize. And it's kind of baffling. Like, I thought overall the trade was still a good one, but I will agree with you guys. The Denis Gurianov one, I never liked this guy. I never understood. He was an analytics darling. And you know what? He's been a can of crushed assholes since he's been in the NHL.
Right.
And hasn't really done anything. And it's I fast. Don't see him doing anything here either. Yeah, he's fast. He's great.
His most notable season was 1920, pre-pandemic. Was the last time he did something notable in the NHL. It was the playoff bubble. 4 years ago!
The Eric Johnson, I mean, wow. We added a Johnson to a bunch of dicks on the back end. So there you go. We had that one there. And, yeah, well, I mean, I did call the retaining salary. I didn't call the official Sean Walker one, but
Wade Allison trade, too.
You know what? And I'm glad that Wade Allison did get dealt because he did deserve a shot somewhere. And I think he'll get a better shot, at least an open, you know what, let's see what this guy can do kind of thing. But I'll give Briere a B. It couldn't have been better. It wasn't that whole, oh, he's cooking. Look at how good he's doing. And it's like, yes,
oh,
because
God.
the idiot GM last season who, you know, ate paint chips as a child did nothing. Like, that's what you're comparing him to. That's what you're comparing to, a guy that did nothing. So literally anything is better than nothing. It wasn't a grand slam home run like some people were saying, but it wasn't a complete failure either. I'd say it was like a really good leadoff double or even a triple, if you really wanted to say that. I thought that the moves afterwards were all like, eh, Eric Johnson, eh, Gurianov, like, eh, who cares? Like, really.
Yeah, I was, you know, for... for what he unloaded, and you also got to put the Nick Seeler extension in there because that came to fruition as the deadline neared as well. And, you know, I didn't hate it. I was like, okay, I understand it. I think it was a little bit rich, especially with the term, but I can understand it and I can support that. And, you know, I'm okay with the Walker dealing. I didn't love the Johansson coming back, but fine. First rounder sounds good. I think the part that kind of really was incongruent to me was this notion of attempting to reward the current roster because they deserve reinforcements for the playoff run. It's like, number one, I completely disagree with that in year one of a rebuild. Holy. Number two, the reinforcements that you brought in are completely inconsequential and negligible NHL players that cannot help this roster. Not. And also, they're taking away valuable ice time from some of the younger players that potentially might be a solution in the long term. So what the hell are you doing bringing in guys like Eric Johnson right now? You're either going to help this team because you believe in it and you're going to bring in a difference maker, or you're not. And bringing in bodies just to bring in bodies, which is exactly what he is, in addition to Gurionov, makes zero sense to me at all. Are you guys able to make sense of those moves?
No, and I get it. You wanted a depth righty just in case, you know. But I don't know. Like, is Eric Johnson any better at this point in his career than Ginning would have been? Really? Truly? Or Emil Andre to come in at least try and help the power play? Like, I just don't understand. Well, he's a good culture guy. You want a cop. You did this and that. He's also fucking 36 years old. You know, you got Mark Stahl, who's 37. I know Eric Johnson's 36. And those are two guys that are now in your regular everyday lineup because everyone else is injured. You know, if you really wanted to help, why not find somebody better? Didn't Matt Dumba get traded for like a fifth or something like that? Like, that would have been a better...
Yes, he did.
It would have been a better move in this situation. Or make a run at Noah Hanifin and try and re-sign him so you have a number one guy moving forward. You know, it's just completely nothing. You know, a fourth-round pick for Johnson, you know, the fourth-round pick, it is whatever. Like, it shouldn't have been a fourth-round pick. It probably should have been like a sixth-round pick. But at the end of the day, it doesn't fucking matter. But it's just, yeah, it's like, why even bother? And Gurionov, you won't give Wade Allison a chance in the NHL, but we will give Gurionov an opportunity. We won't recall Brink or Tuomala. No, but Gurionov needs a chance. It's been 4 years since he did a goddamn thing in his career, but it's why, again, just a case of stifling their own players to bring in these other broken toys from other other teams and organizations. Yeah. There's just no reason to do it.
It's a meddling around the edge. That's my problem with it. It's just, why are you meddling? Why are you doing this? Like, I don't want to see this. It's inconsequential. It's not going to help the team. It really, really bothers me that there was like inertia to do that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what's hilarious? I'm looking at Eric Johnson's stats. So he's a first overall pick, and that's what everybody kept saying. Wow, it's pretty good. You could get a first overall pick and give him a fresh start here.
Out of your mind.
Meanwhile, like, he had 3 goals in 50 games with the Sabres, 0 assists. So he had 3 goals in 50 games and was a -5. So this year, I think it was his first 2 games, there were people like, oh, Eric Johnson had a really good play on that goal there. Oh, he's really good. He hasn't been really that bad at all. He's already a -5 in 3 games. So he's already equaled his plus-minus total.
It's a pylon.
With 50 games of the Sabres in 3 games.
He was a first overall pick in 2006, by the way.
Holy shit. Yeah, that's a while ago.
And he topped out at 39 points, which he did twice. That was a first overall pick. Who went after that guy?
Yeah,
I want to look at this draft.
And like, you can't even, if you're the front office, you can't even say, oh, we needed more veteran leaders. It's like, no. You said that you apparently already fixed the culture. You found the magic elixir with the culture already. You anointed Sean Couturier the captaincy. Where's your captain? Oh, captain, my captain, and all this shit. You had to bring in more irrelevant veteran players to bolster the culture when you said you already perfected it? I mean, it just is. It's like, what are we doing here? What is the point? What is the point of paying attention to this? Like, that's the thing. It's like, I want to see them move in a direction here. Like, this is not the direction that I want to see going on right now.
It is the smartest play by this organization, though. As dumb as it is that every single thing they do revolves around culture, if they can sell it to the fan base that Eric Johnson's the difference maker because he's a culture guy, and they can just go around the edge, not make any series, just give Nick Seeler a lifetime contract because he blocks
zero
shots and
risk.
He brings good culture, zero risk, and people fucking eat it up like this, hey, well done by Danny Brer in that sense. You're not going to win a cup doing this. You're not going to win shit, but you're going to buy yourself years selling a good culture because the goddamn fans are idiots and they'll eat this shit up. So, well done, Philadelphia Flyers front office. I'll give you credit when it's due.
Eric Johnson went first in the pretty shitty draft.
It was Jordan Staal draft, right?
Yeah, Jordan Staal went 2. Jonathan Toews went 3. Backstrom went 4. Kessel went 5. Okposo, Peter Mueller. Remember that guy? That guy was supposed to be, like, incredible, and he did nothing.
Also,
Frolik.
Claude Giroux. Ratner.
Yeah, Claude Giroux went 22nd overall. Yeah, good call. I didn't even see his name there.
The only thing I remember from 2006 was Staal and Giroux.
Brad Marchand went in the 3rd round. And Milan Lucic went in the 2nd round. That's crazy.
Steve Mason?
What a draft. Good God. Culture. I love that we're going to talk. I guess we're pivoting to culture now.
God.
You know, are you guys familiar with artwork?
Whose artwork? Just general or?
I don't know. I'm looking at artwork by a Renaissance painter named Peter Paul Rubens. Okay. And I'm on the big museum in Spain that has all of, he's a Flemish painter. And I'm looking at all of his paintings here. And, you know, he's like a surrealist and an impressionist, and he does beautiful landscapes, and he has lots of religious undertones in his paintings, and all of this great artsy fartsy mumbo jumbo stuff that I don't really see, to be honest with you, because I don't have the eye of a painting. All I know is all of his paintings have really plump ladies painted in the nude, so that tells me he's a dirty old man. And you know what? That's kind of like the Eric Johnson acquisition. You know what? Yeah, he's a number one overall pick. And, oh, yeah, he's a defenseman back in the day. But, yes, he's old now, and he hasn't been relevant for at least 5 years. But we got him. So yeah. Celebrate, everybody. That's great.
It's their big addition to make the playoffs. Huh. Yeah.
Rewarding players. I agree with what Mike said. It's year one of a stated rebuild. You don't necessarily have to reward these. The winning is its own reward with these guys. If these guys were like year number 3 and they're really pushing, then I could see like, okay, so we're taking steps now. Now we're going to reward these guys and push them over the finish line and get going. I don't know. I see where Mike's coming from here. It's year one of a rebuild. It would have been better off to just, obviously they didn't know about the injuries coming up. Although they did know Drysdale was hurt, and then Risto was hurt. And by the way, for a club that's steeped in all this honesty with the fans, nobody knows what's going on with those two guys. Do you?
And
culture.
You know, and I want to talk about culture because Mike was talking about this in the group chat here before we started. But, you know, they didn't trade Lawton because he wanted to stay. They again did not trade Scott Lawton. The second time in the last year, fucking they've done refused to trade him every time since the 2021 trade deadline when they re-signed him in the first place. They didn't trade him because they fucking, because he wanted to stay.
And he deserved it.
He deserved it.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, that whole thing, I mean, this whole concept, I think, is such a basic main issue with the way that this foundation is built, is that there is a level of priority, a level of deference on certain players deserving things. And I think at this point in time, that should be completely irrelevant. Like, why is there any sort of weight given to what one particular player on this roster deserves? I mean, a lot of these guys have been here. I mean, talk about like Couturier and Lawton, and I think those are the two examples that are most relevant right now in terms of this idea, is that, oh, well, Couturier deserves the captaincy and Lawton deserves to stay. He deserves to do what he wants to do and all those things. And it's like, well, no, they've been here long enough. What about all of the things that the season ticket holders have had to endure? All of the other hundreds of thousands of fans have had to endure over the years. Like, we don't deserve to see this. Like, why are particular priorities of individual players who aren't Hall of Famers, who aren't franchise staples, they're not going up in the rafters, they're not going up into the Hall of Fame at all. Like, why are we placing a level of deference on things that they think they deserve to stay and, you know, bang out an extra 2 months for an inconsequential year one rebuild in hopes of making the playoffs and getting bounced in round one? I mean, what is this? Why do they deserve that? And why is there deference given to them? I think it's a horrendous way to look at the team. This is professional sports. This isn't some sort of, you know, mom and pop business where, you know, Billy Bob Smith has been here since he was an intern back in 1999. So we want to make him a vice president now. I mean, this is not that. And it's just I can't get my mind around why people support these types of decisions. It's just really baffling to me.
I mean, Lawton does not have trade protection. He's been here for fucking ever. They had all these rumors in the offseason about the big, you know, returns that they wanted. You know, there were talks that his value was inflated at the deadline because he was like the only center available anymore. And they didn't do it because he wanted to stay. That's insane. I mean, that's just poor asset management more
yeah.
than anything.
And also, Dan, the thing is like, oh, well, nobody overpaid for him. And my thing is like, well, just get market value. Like, why do you need to rip the other team off to just, you can execute a rebuild very efficiently if you just do market value. Like, you don't need to rip other teams off constantly in order to make the damn trade. Get freaking market value. Get the second round pick for all I care. Yeah. Just move on. And then use that later in time, like we've been talking about in other shows. It's just like, oh, we couldn't get, you know, we couldn't get a top 10 pick, so we're not doing it. Okay, well, you're never going to get that. Okay? So
yeah, they asked, you know, they put a ridiculous price tag on all these guys, apparently. That was, you know, what they wanted going in. And I don't know. I figured Lawton wasn't going to go anywhere. Like, between the fact that they didn't trade him last summer, the fact that they just renamed him an alternate captain a few weeks ago with the Couturier coronation, it was like, well, no shit, he wasn't going to go anywhere. So I'm not overly surprised that he stayed, but it doesn't make a lot of sense when the future. And you know, we talked about the Ryan Poehling extension. Like, the whole reason re-signing Poehling would have made sense is if you got rid of Lawton to make that financially feasible. And now they're still both here! And, like, there's no way they're going to move Lawton in the summer. You know, this guy's seeing out the rest of his contract here. He's here until 2026, and if I was a betting man, he's getting another fucking extension after that one, too. You know, it's just, he's just here. You just got to deal with it now.
Yeah. And they're going to say the same thing, Dan, is that it's like right now, like, what's going to change between now and the offseason? It's like, oh, well, we couldn't get a team to overpay for him in March. Why the hell is a team going to overpay for him in June? They're not. They said, hey, my offer was X 4 months ago. My offer is still X here in June. Nothing's changed. So what is going to dramatically change at that point in the future? All change is the Flyers have wasted time in terms of accumulating that asset, being able to figure out how to parlay that into something else. It's positive. That's all that is. It's a net loss for the Flyers.
Yep.
The whole culture thing, and we've talked about it a couple of weeks ago as well, is John Tortorella has an idea of what culture means. Keith Jones has an idea of what culture means. Danny Briere has an idea, and the fans have an idea. And they're not all congruent with each other, and they are all can mean whatever you want it to mean. So the thing that we kept hearing over and over again, and it's one of the things that I thought was refreshing when they had Jones and Briere in their initial press conferences, and it was reinforced by a guy like Anthony DeMarco, whose pieces are really good to read if you want like real impartial good information rather than just spun mumbo jumbo that other people kind of put out there. But what both of Anthony DeMarco reported and what they were saying in their initial press conference was, We have to get the tarnish and shine up the Flyers logo again. That the Flyers organization has to be meaningful again. It has to be about this team, this logo, what it means, what it represents, and the city and the fans that it represents. And when you put a guy like Scott Laughton above that logo and not trade him, to me, that's not the culture that I'm talking about here. People are talking about, okay, listen, he's a good guy in the room. I'm not denying that. And he's probably a good guy overall. I'm not denying that. But at some point, this organization, what really made it big was it was a collective of players and people, coaches, et cetera. And they all played for the logo on the front and not the name on the back. And that's what brought this team, this organization, to Stanley Cups. It's what brought a storied history for this franchise. And they kind of got away from that in the, you know, in the early, you know, 2010s and the Hextall era and everything else. Oh, yeah. And it became about draft picks. And it became about Nolan Patrick. And it became about all these other goofballs. And it wasn't really about the Flyers and doing what's best for the Flyers.
Yes.
And if trading Scott Laughton is what's best for the Flyers, well, tough potatoes. That sucks. Sorry, Scotty, but you're gone. And that's it. There's nothing else to say. Like, I know that they love the vibe in the room and everybody's all buddy-buddy with each other and they're all doing the conga line on the freaking ice and they're all shaking hands with Dan Hilferty in the freaking dressing room and everything else. But at the same time, it's, is this what's best for the team? Yes or no? If the answer is a clear yes, then that's too bad because it's what's best for the Flyers organization, not what's best for an individual player. And that's why I hate the thing. Let's give, you know, Sealer an extra year. Okay. Well, they did it to keep the AAV down. Okay. That's great. So the no trade protection, you had to throw that in there too. There's a fine line between being players, coaches, and managers like Jonesy and Briere are. And then also they're walking a line because you still have to do what's best for the franchise and the organization. They can't be too buddy-buddy with the players and let the players run the roost. At the same time, if they're hard asses and dicks, that could blow up in their face too. They've got to walk a line. And I want to see them firmly put the needs of the organization first at all times. That's what I want to see.
God, Manny, that was so perfectly stated. I'm so thrilled that you went through that with that level of elegance. It was just really well done. But, you know, you're into it, but yeah, it's perfect. I think really, and I think it doubles down in year one of a rebuild is the final decision. The theme has to be best interest of the organization every single time. And I think you hit the nail on the head perfectly where the Flyers and this front office, and historically they've been doing this for the past 10 years plus, is, you know, that's important, but there's also, okay, what's in the best interest of this player? What's in the interest of Scott Laughton? And how can we appease that interest? What's in the interest of Sean Couturier? Is he interested in becoming captain? Do we want to make him the captain? We're going to do that. Or what's the interest of this player for giving me an extra year? Or, you know, is this player interested in a no movement clause? Well, maybe we can do that for them. And they're bleeding that way too much into and integrating that too much into their modus operandi and how they're conducting themselves and doing business with players when it comes to contracts, when it comes to, you know, giving them leadership roles and certain spots on the team. And I think that in a vacuum, doing that once or twice isn't a bad thing, particularly with guys like, you know, like your Connor McDavid's or your Nikita Kucherov's or your Nathan MacKinnon's, your guys that are legitimate difference makers. Like, you're talking cream of the crop in the league, but the Flyers don't have any of those guys, and they're doing it with middle six and bottom six players and guys that really have no business getting that level of deferential treatment. And the answer is, and I think that over time, when you do that more than once or twice on that level, you start to create some problems. These problems snowball where guys have too much money, too many years, too many roster spots, improper leadership, like, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that that snowballs to an effect where it hinders you moving forward. And we're seeing that. We've seen it in the past. I think we're seeing it right now with some of the things this front office is doing with anointing these players and giving them these contracts. It's a big deal. It's going to bite them in the ass later on here. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, Manny, because I think there is a distinction with this team is not always operating with the theme of best interest of the Flyers. They are deviating from that to a very, very dangerous extent.
The players will decide. But the thing is, like, that shouldn't be the case. Your goddamn general manager should be in charge of his own ship and be making these tough calls and be doing what they're doing. And, oh, no, it's going to upset the culture. Tough fucking shit. Try winning a cup. You know, handing out these contracts, these Sealer one, it's like, it's okay if it's one guy. If you want to extend Nick Sealer for the rest of time at $2 million, whatever. But then they did it with Ryan Poehling, and Nick DeLore is under contract. You know, Hathaway's around for another year.
And they already had the Coots contract.
They already have Coots. They've got, you know, all these guys, you know, Sanheim, that fucking idiot Fletcher locked up Sanheim forever. Like, all of a sudden, you've got a ton of contracts on the books that are here forever. And even, you know, if it's one, whatever, it's all of them. They start to add up. You've got money on the books forever now because you're just caring about these random guys. But,
And then the whole...
Go on.
Yeah, the whole players will decide. I'm so glad you mentioned, you know, that key phrase, Dan, is, you know, we have beaten that down for years at this point. And I think it's particularly relevant in, again, year one of a rebuild. In what world do the players decide anything in year one of a rebuild? They decide nothing. These players in year one largely are going to be turned over. Some, maybe there's a handful that you see long-term potential on. I can potentially get on board with that. But in what world do the players in year one of a fucking rebuild decide anything? They're not going to be here. You are placeholders for the future only.
Theoretically, yeah.
That's how the sport works. I'm sorry, this is not Major League Baseball or even the NFL where you can turn over a roster very quickly and go from, you know, from zero to first within maybe 2 to 4 years. The NHL takes a lot longer than that. That's how it is. I don't make the rules, but that's what they are. And unfortunately, you have to play by them. So I just don't understand that kind of rhetoric of the players deciding anything at this period of time during this position of this franchise. It just makes no sense to me. It's ridiculous. That sort of phrase makes sense if you have an experienced team like a Tampa Bay Lightning. Sure, I can understand that. If that team is hitting on all cylinders, they are deciding that, hey, you know, we're ready to continue on our era of excellence and we don't need to be broken up or changes, whatever, you know, a team like that, a team like the Boston Bruins, a team like the Colorado Avalanche. Fine. I can understand that completely. But with the Flyers, that catchphrase is absolutely freaking meaningless. It is a dumb cliche that was used improperly by a non-experienced front office.
Especially for random fucking replacement level players like Nick Sealer and Scott Laughton. Why?
But remember a couple years ago, we were dying laughing because it seemed like every player would tweet out like a picture of, oh, look, I just got a dog, so you can't trade me. Oh, look, I got engaged, so you can't trade me. Oh, look, I had a kid. You can't trade me. And it's like, oh, my God. Like, seriously, it's part of being a hockey player. It sucks. But guess what? That's part of the deal. If you want to be a rock band, and then you tell your record label, you know what? I don't think we're going on a European tour, and I don't think we're going to Australia and Latin America. And they go, oh yes, you are. You're going to go because we are promoting your album, and we're stocking all the shelves, and we're selling it all on Spotify or whatever it is that they do. You are going. And that's it. Like if you're an author, you don't go, you know what? I'm not signing books at Barnes & Noble. Fuck everybody. I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, then you're not going to be selling books. That's just part of the deal. Like, if you're a hockey player, you can get traded. That's it. Unless you got a no move, no trade clause.
Which now they all
do. Flyers get to everybody. But I mean, none of this, like, well, I just got engaged, so, you know, I can't really get traded. Like, really? So like, would that be the worst thing? Like, you know what? I just got engaged, and you know what? Oh, well, I got traded to Vegas. See ya. <Yeah. laughs> Like, no problem. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to the level of deference that is given to this roster, I think, is inappropriate. I think it's just wholly inappropriate for where they're at, for what they are. I mean, it'd be one thing if you had, you know, regardless of whether or not it's a year one of a rebuild, if you had, you know, a stud first line like some other teams and you just couldn't figure it, or you just lacked a goalie, or, you know, the Devils, like, you know, for example, like, I could potentially see some of these philosophies making sense, or some of these phrases, ways of thinking making sense. But the Flyers aren't that. They aren't even at that level. And they're trying to operate as if they've been there, and they are at that level. And that's the thing that bothers me, is I don't think that there's any level of preference, deference, whatever you want to call it, that should be given to really anybody on this team. I don't think that any veteran player, including a Sean Couturier and a Scott Laughton, and the list goes on, that was part of the prior era here, should be given jack shit when it comes to deference. They were part of the issue back when Giroux and Voracek were here. They had their opportunity to fix things. They didn't. The only reason they're here is because the asshole and moron former general manager bent over backwards for them and gave them ludicrous contracts. It's the only fucking reason they're here. And then all of a sudden, oh yeah, these guys, oh my God, bow down. They are a key to the future. Oh my God, the leadership group, this is what we got. It's just so fucking ridiculous to me that we have to accept that. I mean, it's just like, hey, these are byproducts of mistakes of the former regime. That's exactly what they are. Byproducts of mistakes. And I'm not going to glorify them like a lot of the fan base does, a lot of the beat writers are, that they are a solution for the future, because they are not solutions at all. Refuse to believe it.
Meanwhile, with Cutter Gauthier, was, guess what, kid? You're going to the America. We're sending you back to college for another year. And he went, oh yeah? Fuck you then. I'm leaving. Trade me. I'm not even going to pick up the phone. And granted, he's public enemy number one, but I mean, you like bow down to Scott Laughton, but you let your top, you know, forward prospect in North America, just basically treated him like a fucking rag doll that needed to go back to college. And then like you bow down to like all these other players, but Cutter Gauthier, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, who are you, kid? This is the Flyers. We command things. We're the boss. We run things for our organization. Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
Yeah, I just can't get I just can't understand where we're at. You know, looking at it from a bird's eye view, it's so incongruent to me. The composition of the roster, the rhetoric from the front office, and what we're supposed to be believing are the long-term solutions that they've found solutions already. Jeez, in year one, wow. I mean, that's a record. It's a world record. Nobody ever did that in the history of sports. You rebuilt in under a year. Wow. Good for you. Like, it just, it's so outrageous to me to, you know, to give any level of deference to what they've done so far. I mean, they've done a couple of minor moves that have set them up for the future. That's it.
Yep. They completely lost what a rebuild means, and they're building around 30-year-olds that have been here for 15 years. So, yeah, I mean, that's where they're at. Second period is over. It's 2-2, so we don't have any further conclusion on that one just yet. But we'll wrap this first part up here. I don't know who'll be back this week. There'll be shows with people, I'm sure. Somebody, sooner or later. Plenty of show on the website, BurleyPuck.com. At Dan the Flyer Fan at BurleyPuck_Pod. I did put up the Flyerside Chat update. If you're looking for that, the Tip to Tip podcast is up. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, should be everywhere else as well. And, yeah, you can check all that out. And, Mike, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Flyer_AF. And, yeah, let's just keep it going here, guys. You know, it's been a tough one to get through, but looking forward to seeing what's going on in the offseason, I guess. Like we say, there's only a couple of moments of truth that happen. One's a trade deadline, and one's in June, and wait until June. So let's do it.
And Manny.
At Manny Benavidez, and as always, brotherlypuck.com. I'm so happy, Mike, that you encouraged me to use my no-move clause to stop me from getting traded to Noah Lee Pod or to Sisterly Pod. I say no, Mr. Esch, no. I'm staying here forever. Give me a 4-year deal.
Well, the players decide. All right, everyone. until next time, goodbye and good night.